happier than later. Oh, and I forgot my agenda. Oh, wow. Do you have an extra agenda there for me, Ken? If not, I can just pull it up here. I'd like to welcome everyone to our work session. We're expecting Commissioner Kamalu here soon, so maybe she'll show up. But in the meantime, Curtis Koch, our clerk auditor, is here. Welcome. Thank you for all the work that you do. We had some questions about ranked choice voting. And anyway, we thought you'd bring you here and you could educate us. So if I could give you some time and you can kind of let us know your thoughts on the process.
Oh, sounds great. Thank you. Appreciate the time to come and chat with you, and I hope it can be a chat. I have some notes that I'm going to be following, but please, if at any time you want to jump in and ask a question, happy to answer the questions. Ranked choice voting has a sort of an interesting history with the county clerks. In 2013 is when the clerks of the state were actually approached about ranked choice voting. And at that time, the clerks looked at it and felt that it wasn't something that they were really interested in pursuing. They didn't feel like it was in the best interest of the public. About 5 years of lobbying efforts took place. And in 2018, a bill was run and passed that allowed for a pilot project to occur within the state, within municipalities. And at that time, what the clerks said and what we were told was, this is a municipal issue. This has nothing to do with you. The municipalities get to choose, and that seemed reasonable to the clerks. We said, poor Commissioner Kamalu, she's been in way too many meetings already today with me to have to sit next to me. The clerks of the state said, okay, if this truly is a municipal issue and it has nothing to do with the counties or the clerks, then we will go neutral on it. We still don't believe that ranked choice voting is a good idea, and I'll get into some of the reasons for that. But this is a municipal issue. And so tonight, I'm not here to tell you how you should run your election. I'm here to give you the perspective of your county clerk and hopefully a trusted contractor, because that's what we do. We contract with you for these services. You're not forced into it, and I would never presume that we would want to force that upon you. So in 2018, the pilot was launched. This year, HB 75 put a little twist on the pilot. It went from not being a county issue to, in its original form, if a city decided to do ranked choice voting, they could tell their clerk, you will do ranked choice voting and you will administer that election for us. So the contracting relationship really kind of changed. There was some force language. You had one governmental entity being able to tell another governmental entity the service that they would perform and how they would perform it. Naturally, the counties opposed that. And yesterday, it did come out. The bill did come out of the Senate committee, but with a third substitute. And that third substitute basically takes us back to where we were 2 years ago. And that says that a city can choose to contract with an election provider. So our election provider is ES&S, the system that we use. You could contract with ES&S. You could contract with Dominion. You can contract with another city. You can run the ranked choice voting yourself if you'd like to. Or you can contract with another county throughout the state that offers that service. Right now, Utah County is the only county that is clerk's office that is administering any ranked choice voting. So that gives you sort of the stage of where we're at. So why are the clerks opposed? the clerks of the state, and really, when you're looking at ranked choice voting, I can point to two facts that I can tell you, because there's a lot of opinion. Curtis has opinion. There's lobbyists that have opinion. Obviously, there's opinion. The two facts are this. The first fact is, if you fully implement ranked choice voting, you can save money because you don't have a primary election. You save that cost. Can't argue that with you. I won't argue that with you. You eliminate an election. The other fact is that it adds a level of complexity to the administration of elections and to how voters interact with your ballot. That's a fact. I'm not saying that's good. I'm not saying that's bad. But you are bringing a level of complexity. So, as election administrators, how do we overcome the complexity issue? Well, I can tell you, we do that in our current processes through consistency. Our methods for administering elections, our processes, our audits bring consistency. And as we do them over and over again, we find better ways, more efficient ways, more secure ways, more transparent ways to administer elections. And so consistency is really important to me. Representative Ray Ward, appreciate him. I've sat down with him. We've talked ranked choice voting. His view of ranked choice voting is different than mine, and I appreciate that. And he asked me a really good question. He said, Curtis, what would it take for you to support ranked choice voting? I said, wow, that's let me get back with you. And I did get back with him. And what I told him was, Representative Ward, I need consistency. Because if I can have consistency, then I can educate voters. I can certainly do that. I can build processes that are consistent from one election to another and have safe and secure and confidence in our election process. So this is why, from a county perspective, it becomes challenging. In 2014, Davis County implemented vote by mail. 2015 was my first year as the clerk. We went out to the cities and we said, cities, we'll offer you a traditional election style and we'll offer you vote by mail. And we had about 50-50. And we administered that election. And what we learned is it's a really bad idea to be administering two styles of election. Because our office started getting phone calls. The year before, people had received their ballot by mail. And now we're getting a phone call saying, hey, I haven't got my ballot. Well, what city are you in? I'm in this city. And, well, you're not getting a ballot by mail. Your city is doing a traditional polling location. And they said, well, no. My friend or my neighbor or my family member, they got their ballot. Well, where do they live? Well, they live in this city. They're doing vote by mail. And there was some voter confusion and there was some frustration. So in 2017, we came out and we wanted to be good partners. As early as we could, we made the decision, look, we're going to administer one type of election and it's going to be vote by mail. And we wanted to give our cities the ability to make that decision and that choice that was best for you. So we came out early. We said, this is what we're doing. If you want to have a traditional polling location, we'll do what we can. We'll provide voter rolls. You know, we'll do what we can to help you succeed. This is not petty. This is not. This is just we are seeing having consistent elections is really important, and we can train our voters and help them have confidence in their election system. So, consistency is really important. Ranked choice voting, from an administrative perspective, we see some challenges. My first challenge is audit. In our current system, our audit process is I can take a random sample of ballots cast, I can look at the image, I can go to the database and I can say, here's this ballot, here's the image. Yep, it recorded correctly. This person was marked, this is the person that got credit. And we can do that, and that's part of our audit process. Then we can make sure that it tabulated correctly. When I get to ranked choice voting, now I have two options after the ballot has been marked and scanned and brought into my database. I can either purchase software from ES&S, and I can take that data set and put it into that software, or I can go get a free software from a third party. I would say, I would say a special interest group, because they are lobbying for ranked choice voting. So I can receive that app from them, and I can take that data set and I can put it in, and it will kick out results. Where do I audit? If I have three or four or five iterations, how do I audit? I can tell you the New York State Board of Elections right now, they just ordered a hand recount because they employed ranked choice voting, and this was one of the hangups. I can put the data in and I can get data out, but can I audit that? We don't have confidence in that. I have a system right now that I can say I am confident in. Can I do it? Yes, I can do it. There's a lot of things I can do. With enough time, money, and resources, there's a lot of things I can do. But do I have confidence? Tabulation. Currently, in the state of Utah, ranked choice voting has been used in two municipalities, Vineyard and Payson, and it's been used by the Republican Party for their June primary, and I believe the Democratic Party as well. When I look at that, you are looking at a single seat race. Now, in Davis County, we have multi-seat races. You know, we vote for three, and that's how we choose. So how does ranked choice voting change when you go into a multi-seat race? Well, with ranked choice voting, we have 10 candidates, and we start eliminating. This bottom one, you know, assuming everybody ranks it, your bottom candidate falls out, and those people's second place vote becomes a first place vote. And you just keep doing that, right? In the state of Utah, and this is called the Utah method, and if you look up the Utah method on Fair Vote, which is obviously they're a big proponent of ranked choice voting, you'll see that they call it the Utah method for multi-seat races. Their blog is not as favorable about the Utah method, because what happens in the Utah method is you get your first place, and your first place is, and this is how we got the Utah method, it's all about plurality, 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 plurality. You have to have 50% to be the winner. Okay, well, once we get to 50%, there's your first winner. But if you drop that first winner's ballots out, nobody else can get to 50% of the total votes cast. So now, instead of moving votes from bottom up, now you start moving votes from top down, because you have to have that 50%. It's a different method. It's one that, as your county clerk, I don't have a lot of confidence in, because my audit process. Some of the other challenges. Releasing of votes on election night. Once again, this is your election. We're your contractor. What do you want us to release on election night? Do you want us to release the data set of what traditionally has happened? Here's the one that's leading on election night, because we've got ballots coming in. We've got them coming in from polling locations. We've got them coming in still through the mail, as long as they're legally cast. What do you want us to release on election night? as your contractor, I would encourage you not to release anything. Because in elections, close races are the races that people get uptight about. we pray for wide margins in elections, because it's those tight ones where things get a little more testy in those races. So now, if I release election results on that night, do I run it through the application and we show that, look, on it looks like your three council members are going to be this person, and this person. And yet, somebody did a really strong get out the vote. They got people to come to your polling location. They got people to drive and drop or walk and drop their ballot. And now the person that got eliminated in the third round, next time you release the results, they're your top person. They're your top vote getter. Now, once again, can I explain that? Yeah. Can I do it in a 30-second soundbite when KSL is filming me? Probably not as effectively. And this is the state of our nation right now. We enjoyed record turnout. What we're not enjoying, and I can say this, as an election official, we do not enjoy the doubt that has been cast on the system, because we had record turnout, but we have record doubt in our election system. So, being able to have that 30-second soundbite, because that 30-second soundbite turns into 10 seconds on KSL is what I've found. You better be able to clearly and quickly articulate what's going on, because our citizens make quick judgments on right, wrong, false, good, bad, evil, this party, that party. You guys don't have to deal with parties, so I think that's a really positive thing for you. So what am I releasing on election night? And maybe more importantly, what you need to be asking yourself is, what is your city recorder releasing on election night? Because I'm your contractor. That 30-second soundbite, if it's a county election or a state or federal election, that's my job. If I'm a contractor, you guys get to decide, what are you releasing, when are you releasing, how transparent, how open, and not transparent in a, ooh, we're going to hide something, but how do you help your citizens have confidence? Releasing of votes on election night, I've covered that, tabulation, audit. Some of our other issues, overall complexity. Let me see if I brought that. I did. Ranked choice voting adds complexity, and I'm going to read you two sections of code, and this is on how you do a recount. The first section of code that I'm going to read is our current procedure on what determines a recount in your municipality. A losing candidate in the race is equal to or less than 0.25% of the total number of votes cast. You fall within that range, we're doing a recount. It's very clear. In ranked choice voting, and I'm just reading statute to you, first of all, we need to understand a definition. You need to understand what your candidate amplifier is. Candidate amplifier means the product of two less than the number of the candidates in the given canvassing phase of a multi-candidate race and 0.02%. So if we have 10 candidates in our first phase, it's going to be 8 times 0.02. And that becomes our candidate amplifier. Now we can actually get to the code on what constitutes a recount. A recount threshold means the sum of the candidate amplifier and the following. A, for a canvassing phase in which fewer than 100 valid votes are counted, 0.01%. For a canvassing phase in which, B, for a canvassing phase in which at least 100 but fewer than 500 valid votes are counted, 0.019%. It goes down through more than 10,000. Okay. That's how you do, that's what triggers a recount. But my question to you is, what is a candidate amplifier? And why does that determine what the recount threshold is? I can tell you as an election official, I don't know. So that's an example of the code, and I would encourage you to go pull out the pilot project and read the code and see if you're comfortable with the complexity that it injects into your election, because it is your election. Consistency matters. In elections, it matters. Now, I'm not saying that we should never be innovative, that we should never change. In fact, the history of Davis County and the clerk's office in Davis County is one of innovation. The first large county in 2014 to implement vote by mail. One of the first large counties to implement vote centers. One of the leading counties when it comes to implementing electronic poll books. We are not anti-innovation. We have led innovation throughout the state. We are saying this is something we are not comfortable with. And so what we've asked the legislature this year is really pretty simple. You passed a pilot. What's the criteria for success? How do we know that we're succeeding? Because once that pilot passed, I had a pretty good indication it was already a success before Payson and Vineyard ran it, right? I can tell you, Vineyard, in their seat one council, they had 1,098 votes cast. In Payson, in seat one, they had 2,716 votes cast, roughly 3,800 votes cast. They spent $25,000 of state funding, so that was cool. They didn't have to pay for it, in marketing. They hired a marketing firm. So for 3,800 voters to be better educated about vote by mail, we spent $25,000. Now, is there scales of economy? Sure. But as a county clerk, if North Salt Lake administers ranked choice voting, Bountiful does a traditional election, Layton does ranked choice voting, the consistency is gone. And oh, by the way, some cities may choose to do, and I don't know why they would do this, but I heard one city in the state is considering this, they would do a primary with ranked choice voting. The one fact I can tell you is you can save money. You can save money. So why you would do that, I don't know, but that's not my business. That's their business. Consistency in elections. And even if you do in your general election, next year, when it comes to the primary, most people are not as engaged. I'm not commenting on intelligence, because when I've said this in the past, people have said, are you saying voters are dumb? No, I'm saying they're much smarter than me because they're not doing this job. But once you start switching vote methods, and in a primary election you do it, and then in your next one you don't, in a municipal election you vote this way, in another you don't, it gets confusing. Now, I can limit the confusion by consistency, and that's what we've asked the legislature to do. We hope that this will get roots in that we have asked them, please do a study. There are other methods to vote. And at the end of the study, a fair, honest, equal study that says, here's the criteria we're going to measure against. And if election reform is needed, then the clerks will be there. And if ranked choice voting comes out, then the clerks will be there. But we have not had a fair and honest discussion. We've had lobbyists say this is the way. I have a handout for the council and mayor, and you have been super generous with your time. And I haven't had any questions, so I'm a little nervous. But this is a handout regarding election reform. Starts out talking about plurality. Is that what we're trying to solve? Is that what we're trying to solve in Utah? Because if it is, great. But plurality in Utah has occurred 5% of the time. And if you apply ranked choice voting data from Maine, Minneapolis, San Francisco, ranked choice voting only changes the outcome 3% of the time. So 5% of the elections result in 3% change, which really means in less than 0.15% of ranked choice voting elections, the outcome will differ from current elections. And that's what you see in the state of Utah in every race that's been run. The most popular candidate in round one ended up being the most popular candidate in the end. So do we want to inject this to have that kind of change? And if the legislature tells me, yes, we do, and this is the law, and implement it consistently, then I can overcome the complexity. We can train our voters. And we will do that. But there are other methods. Approval voting. That was in a bill this year that got killed. Approval voting is pretty straightforward. We already do it, essentially, in the state of Utah. Remember Vote for Three? If approval voting is nothing more than you have five candidates and the voter looks at it and says, I can support Mr. Horrocks. I can support Ms. Baskin. That Koch guy, not so sure about him. I can support Commissioner Kamalu. I can support Ken Latham. And then at the end, you tally it up. And so the education part of it is, okay, how did, when you had 1,000 ballots cast, how did your first place get 900? Because they were really popular. Everybody agrees, yeah, that person, they can represent me. All of the, once again, I'll go back to opinions of ranked choice voting. You can apply those same positive opinions to approval voting. The difference is when I go to audit, now it's a straight, what did the ballot say? Or what's the image? What was recorded? I add it up. There's your audit. I'm confident in the results. And so there's runoffs. There are things called star voting. Star voting is not available in the state of Utah. There's no way to do it in the state of Utah right now. But star voting is a method. There are a wide variety of methods. So if election reform is really needed, then let's have an open, honest, transparent discussion about how we elect our officials in the state of Utah, and then let's implement consistency. With that, I'm happy to answer any questions. I do get a little amped up, so I think it's called being a geek. most people don't get excited about this stuff, but I'd be happy to leave this with you.
Thanks, Curtis. Are there any questions? Make sure you push your button to turn it green.
Mayor, can I comment?
Yes.
So, thank you.
You need to get closer to your microphone.
Oh, thank you so much for coming. I appreciate it. So, I've been on the council for 8 years. And I'm one of the ones that really loves this. So we're in opposition, and I really liked your comments. So first, you know, you talked about two elections versus one, right? You can save one whole election. I have so many neighbors and so many people that tell me, I already voted. And I'm like, that's great, but you didn't vote in the final. They're like, what do you mean? I filled out my ballot and I'm done. You're like, well, you didn't vote. So you talked about complexity. Primaries have added a lot of complexity because people just don't understand that they got to vote twice. And you talked about, hey, the first place person always wins. Well, the first place person in the primary always wins, right? Like, you already know the primary people win, not every time, but you see that the primary people are winning, they continue on to win. And then you have all these neighbors that say, hey, I don't want to have to vote again. I don't want to have to go do this. So we could solve that problem and make it cheaper. I'm all for saving money and making things easier for people. So that's great. I liked your complexities, so I want to talk about them. I think one thing you talked about was, hey, is approval voting better? Is ranked choice voting better? Is our current method better? And one of the issues I have with the system is that there's gamemanship involved in how you vote. So there's strategy. Instead of just You know, you talked about, hey, I can approve them and I can approve them. Well, right now, the next vote in North Salt Lake is going to have two seats open for city council. So you're going to vote for two, right? Well, if you only vote for one, that gives your candidate a better chance than voting for two. So never vote for two if you want your candidate to win, because voting for one's better. Well, that's offensive, because you should be voting for two people. You want two people to get in. You want two people to represent you. Like, you want to be able to show your support, but the strategy to help your candidate win is to vote for one. And I just find that as a representative talking to neighbors, that's a problem in our current system. Like, that shouldn't exist. We shouldn't have a system where you can game it to make your vote more valuable for your candidate than voting for two like you should, right? So I find that a problem with the existing thing. So I know plurality, they talk about, you know, that's the goal. I feel like the goal should be to remove gamemanship and to just be able to vote for who you want. So the next problem I find is that...
Good question there.
Yeah.
Can't you do that in ranked voting? You could just vote for one?
You can, but if your candidate's last place, your votes drop out, and then your vote doesn't count anymore. In ranked choice, if you don't fill out the full ballot, you just eliminated yourself from making an entry into the election. Where in the other case, you double weighted your vote, right? So instead, I've literally had people tell me, I'm going to vote for you and only you to double weight my vote. And that's a problem. Like, I don't like that, because we have good people in our city and we should be able to support multiple people and help them, right? Like, so I think there's an existing gamemanship into the election process today when you vote for two or three or something. And I think that same process happens in approval. So in approval voting, you can't approve of everyone. You can only approve of your first choice, because otherwise you're equally helping all choices, right? So if you really want yours to win, you only approve of your vote, of your choice, and not the others. So there's, when there's gamemanship involved, that's a problem.
Can I ask a quick question, Ryan?
Yeah.
Participating in political conventions that use ranked choice voting, I think there's probably gamemanship in ranked choice voting as well. Like, they're always like, okay, but I had someone call me and she said, are you voting for me for governor? And I said, no, I'm not. She said, can I be number two? And so, you know, like, that's the thing, is I think there's gamemanship there as well. But I'll let you go on.
Oh, no. I think that's good gamemanship. So that is appealing to your voter. So then when someone comes to you and says, hey, I know you're not my first choice, right? And your first choice is this great candidate, and that's awesome. But let me tell you why I should be your number two, and what I could do, and what we need to do, right? That is appealing to your voter. And I also feel like it creates kind elections, because right now, in a ranked choice of voting, you can't run a scorched earth campaign, because you'll be 1 in 5, right? Like, you can't go out and say terrible, hateful things about people, because you're going to drop in everybody else's rank. But if you are kind and appeal to people, you have the chance to appeal to be their second or third choice, right? So I feel like it helps elections being kind. And nationally, I feel like kind elections would be a great thing. Like, to have people care about all their votes instead of like a scorched earth mentality.
We should probably go to lunch. What about, like, do you end up in the mushy middle? Like, what if the reason you're my number one is because I love that issue that you are strong on,
yeah,
and I can't vote for number five because he doesn't support that issue? And so is there a chance that we're watering down mandates to actually go lead?
Well, yeah, that's a great question, but think about it nationally in 2016, right? So you either can't vote for Hillary, so you're going to vote for Trump, or you can't vote for Trump, so you're going to vote for Hillary, right? But if you're anyone else, you can't vote for them because you're going to throw your vote away, right? So you have a situation where you're never voting, except for some people, you're never voting for who you want. You're voting for who you hate the least. So, but in a ranked choice voting, that's not the case. You always get to vote for who you support, no matter what. Even if that candidate's going to get one vote, right? You're going to write in Mitt Romney to be president. It doesn't matter. You didn't throw away your vote, because then your second vote is your fallback, your safety.
So, but isn't
that... You always get to vote for that person.
Yeah, right, yes, right.
Sir. It's so, whoever's leading, you always get to vote for.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Ryan, but I don't think this is a topic for really discussion. We kind of have to have Mr. Koch here.
Well, so that's a good point. I mean, we can address more of his comments, but yeah, that's what I'm trying to address. He said...
No, I'm fine. We'll discuss it. We can look at the pros and cons. And that's something we would do as a council. I just hate to have Mr. Koch here.
Hey, other than he could answer the questions.
But yeah, he could answer these questions. I mean, the comments are that...
I mean, it's fine. No, as long as there are questions, that's fine.
Okay, I agree.
If it's comments, then...
So, Ryan, can I interject on your example there? So let's say there's Trump and Hillary. Okay, very divisive candidates. And so there's Joe Moderate running. And so everyone votes Joe Moderate second. He wins. So nobody got their candidate. Everyone got their second choice.
And he's really nice, but I'm not sure he was ready.
But to counter that, nobody got their third choice. Right? I mean, so the instance is you're not voting for Hillary, so you're voting for the opponent. Well, if 34% of population wants one person and 33 wants another and 33 wants another, right? Like, I would rather have some sort of consolidated person that most of the people can live with than have 66% of the population say that's not my president. Like, that's a problem.
I just think we're going towards mediocrity then. You know, I take my chances supporting my guy, and if they lose, they lose.
Yeah. So, I feel like that gives you the chance to always pick the person who's not mediocre as your first choice, instead of gaming it to be like, well, I got to pick this bad person because I don't want this terrible person.
So can I answer your question?
Yeah, absolutely.
Can gamesmanship occur in our current system? Yes. Can it occur in ranked choice voting? Yes. Can it occur in approval voting? Yes. If you can look up, and unfortunately I'm a little embarrassed to say this, I've looked this up. How do you game ranked choice voting? And I read the first paragraph and I'm like, I kind of think I know elections, and I am confused as heck. This person's telling me to vote for my second person, my first person.
It's like my batteries.
Sorry about that. So can gamesmanship happen? Yes, but that's the opinion part of this question. Is it more civil? I happen to be a delegate for a state convention, and I saw some things that weren't very civil from one of the leading candidates. But that's opinion, right? And we can all have our opinions, and I respect what you're saying. But when it comes down to it, what we're asking for is consistency in elections. And this is my overriding concern. We're talking about Trump and Hillary. We're talking about races that are not municipal. And what HB 75 showed us this year is that it was misrepresented. This was not about municipal elections. This is everything about putting this eventually to how you elect your county, state, and federal election officials. And once again, if that's the best way, the clerks will not be obstructionists. But 350,000 people is who I represent when it comes to election interests. So I may not be a policymaker on the Hill, but I do feel like I have a say in what elections should be what should be happening in elections, because my office has 120 plus years of election experience in it. And so please, what we ask for is consistency. What we ask for is a fair accurate study. Don't tell me it's a success because you have the marketing money to tell me that it's a success.
Lisa, could you make sure you push your button?
And sharing your expertise with us, I appreciate it. And I think I clearly get your perspective, and I appreciate your frankness. Question I've got, do you measure success by voter turnout?
I would say yes, and this is the reason why. It is a right to vote. It is also a duty and a responsibility to vote. And one of the successes of vote by mail is you give a ballot to somebody and they can sit down and they can take their time. If they want to be educated, and educated doesn't mean they think like me, doesn't mean they think like you. It means they take time to get educated. Now they could do that before, but 3 weeks before, we're handing them a ballot. And so if people are being educated and they're voting, yeah. This is a representative government. And so I think voter turnout is a sign of success.
Okay, let me ask you another question. And this is kind of for Brian. Why is it that a moderate, the way you've placed that scenario, is a mediocrity?
Only in the sense that it was everyone's second choice. So it was nobody's first choice. So in that sense, quoting Vince Lombardi, there's only two places, first and last, and everyone came in last. Now, if I lived in San Francisco, bring on ranked choice voting. That's my only hope to get rid of the crazy element, right? But in Davis County, I don't think so.
But I like that example, because if it was nobody's first choice, doesn't matter if he's 100% of everyone's second choice, they would have dropped out in the first round, right? Because they're the last place of first choice. And so they still have to have enough first choice votes. They still have to be chosen as first as a bunch. But I want to go back to what the mayor said. I got to ask a question. And I think that my problem with your consistency, I like that. I'm an auditor. I run finance for a company. So I got to audit books. I got to control. I want to be able to have my method. So I like that. The problem is I only have one department. I've got 21,000 people that I represent, and I need to represent their interests best. And I get that you represent the whole county, but I don't have the right. I'm not at the state. I can't tell you you're forced to run a ranked choice for the whole county. But I do have a vote to say I can run it for my 21,000. And when I talk to my neighbors and they want it, I feel like I got to support who I'm representing, right? So I get that from a county auditor standpoint, you're saying, hey, look, if the whole county would run ranked choice, I'd support it because it's consistent. I can run it one method. I have one methodology. I mean, Representative Ward says, well, what does it take if I mandate it for the whole state and I can audit it and have it be consistent? I'm there. Right? Like there's no voter education's easier. It's mandated. But this is the only vote I have, right? I only have 21,000 people to represent. So I got to represent them and they want it. And I think that there's ways to overcome the concern about, you know, what to release on election night or a recount, because we could set the rule and we have an amazing clerk. Like, I'm not worried. She's going to do a great job. And they could release the information 2 weeks later or 72 hours or whatever we decided, right? And we could come up with an easy system that says, this was round one, this was round two, this is round three, this is round four, it's finalized, and have it. So I think that it could be clear and transparent. And, you know, in order to have a consistent cash process, you have to enact it once, right? So I got to enact it once so that I can be consistent going forward. And I do like that you like innovation. I think some of the new ballot dropping off and making it easier to vote day of election instead of, you know, oh, you didn't mail it by this day, and so now you got to do this. And oh, nope, you can't go in because did you mail that? Well, here's your provisional ballot. We've got unincorporated people of Davis County that are right in between the cities, and they show up to vote and then they're turned away because they got to go vote somewhere else. Inconsistency and complicated in voting is a disservice to our citizens. So I mean, we're 99% of the way there. I just want to represent my citizens.
So one other comment I was going to make or ask, and that is just this, like, was it last session that they admitted, eliminated straight ticket voting, just straight party voting? There probably wasn't a study on that. There probably wasn't data to show whether it was successful or not. But the understanding was a lot of good candidates were never even vetted. They were never even, the voters were not educated. So sometimes there are systems in place that do make democracy more difficult to achieve. And democracy is messy and inefficient and inconvenient, and probably in many cases inconsistent. And so that's the nature of the beast, right?
Can you just clarify for me the state of the law right now? Do you have to do the ranked choice voting if we decide to do it? Or if we decide to do it, do we go out and just find someone else to support us?
Currently, if HB 75 goes through, nothing changes.
And so?
Meaning the county is not forced. The forced language was taken out yesterday, and that's how it got through committee.
Okay. So if we as a council decide to go with ranked choice voting, we just have to go find someone else to support us. Is that how it works?
Or you can do it yourself.
Right.
And I don't. You always have that choice.
Right.
I would never presume. No,
I really appreciate your thought and perspective on this because again, you're representing the county and it's what's best for the county. And just letting us know from your perspective, the problems that are there, which are there. And anyway, that will affect our choice. But if we decide to go ranked choice voting, you won't be supporting us. But we do appreciate your comments and letting us know your concerns because it certainly gave me some things to think about that I hadn't thought about before. I mean, I have other questions about ranked choice voting and probably different concerns of what everybody else has, but we'll address that on the night when we really decide how we want to do it. And when does that have to be? I thought I saw March 1st, so we're out of luck anyway, or no?
So we will, after tonight, so 2 weeks from tonight, we'll either put the contract, we'll probably put the contract to do a traditional voting, a traditional election on your agenda, which is the contract we had on the February 2nd agenda, which we tabled to have this discussion. And so we'll do that and then we'll decide.
And just watch HB 75 because HB 75 does have the clause that extends it.
Okay.
The January 1 would get extended. And so
till May, yeah, we can.
That's why when I talked with Ken, I said, yeah, don't sign it. I mean, you guys need to do what you need to do.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is not something that we're supportive of as the county clerk.
Yeah. And I appreciate that. While I have you here, I wanted to ask you one other thing, which is something that isn't this, but Commissioner Stevenson came in and talked to us about issues that the county has with the islands of unincorporated county that are all over. Is there anything that you can do or that you're doing to help eliminate that? And Commissioner Kamalo, I can maybe ask you as well, because it's difficult as a city because we do provide, I mean, when they call for police, they're calling us. And I think we can provide these services both to these unincorporated pockets as well as to Chevron cheaper, more efficiently, and more effectively than what the county has. And so as a county resident, it concerns me as well that I think it's something that needs to be dealt with. And I'm so, well, I have the both of you there. Is there something that either one of you can do to help get rid of these unincorporated pockets?
So So the three commissioners in office right now? Yes. The three commissioners in office right now, so me and Commissioner Stevenson and Commissioner Elliott, have great interest to work on the incorporating of these pockets. And so we haven't done a lot of work on it yet, but that's kind of good for me to hear that you have that similar interest. We think that there are ways to research and to find the win-wins for all. How's that? It's the way it's been explained to me is that these pockets exist for kind of odd and different reasons, each one of them. You know what I mean? And to me, that's just funny history and what
I think it's better. So they can save about $10 on property taxes. But
yeah,
but I may be wrong.
And the other thing is, Curtis can speak to this better than I can. But I believe that I've heard about the math that those folks in the unincorporated are receiving more for their county dollars than others. There's maybe some extras that we end up having to pay for those folks. And so the deal that they're getting is really not true. It's not that there's not, you know, as much investment needed to take care of them as citizens. So, but Curtis can probably say that better than I.
So as the county auditor now, get away from the clerk side. I can tell you this is an area that I believe needs to be addressed. The county has grown up, and it's in the best interest of the citizens. Look, state statute is written that unincorporated is for areas that really aren't being serviced by cities. But to your point, Mayor, one thing we do well is when somebody's in trouble and they need a police officer, the closest one's going to come. And so I am very supportive from a budgetary perspective and the capacity that I serve as the budget officer. I would be very supportive of looking at contracts that would allow these pockets to be serviced by cities. And if that means that would allow for further action in the future, I think that should be looked at. This is something that needs to be resolved.
Not only the police, but they're using our streets, they're using our parks, they're using a lot of things that I hate to call them freeloaders, but in my mind, they're freeloading off the cities to a large extent. And I think as a county resident, again, I just don't think you're the most effective provider of most of these services.
I would agree. And I think I refer to it as equity issues. I think there are equity issues there. And I would agree with that sentiment. It doesn't make sense to, I'll take plowing of a street. For us to drive a plow truck down to plow 1 to 1.5 square miles and then drive them 15 miles back to another location to plow 2 miles of road. So I think there are equity issues and to the degree that I can be supportive of it, I would support the commission in their efforts to address these challenges, knowing that it's not going to be popular. We know that. But the county grew up, and that's a good thing.
All right.
Only about 27 or 28 or 29 miles of unincorporated county roads, right? It's
Yeah. I tell my rural counterparts, we've got 27 miles of unincorporated road, and they just look at me like, are you kidding me? We've got thousands of miles of unincorporated road. It's a challenge to keep that 27 plowed.
Well, and I don't think people realize, but the county used to plow South Weber's roads, which I didn't understand. And then one day the county said, we're not going to plow your streets anymore. Figure out how to do it yourself. And so the county has stepped up before. And you're right, we've grown up. We're really pretty much city wall-to-wall cities. So,
and as far as prioritizing, I would say we're getting there. I think within the next 2 years for my first term and Commissioner Stevenson's first term, we should be able to get to this and figure some things out.
Yeah, thank you. Curtis, I think we'll welcome your handouts. And I think we're done with you, but
perfect.
I think we get to keep you for a little while longer.
Yeah.
If there are any questions, would love to chat after, or Ken has my cell number. Please don't hesitate to call. I am going to send a follow-up document as well, which is a statement by 28 of the 29 clerk auditors of the state, just outlining our position, basically what I've told you tonight, consistency, study, please, and then let's go.
Okay, thank you. Are there any other questions for Curtis before let him go? Okay, thank you so much, and I appreciate your time. With that, we'll end our work session and start into our regular session. And if I can pull up my agenda, I don't think we're going to get through everything. We are here. This is not on the agenda, but Ryan, could I ask you to lead us in a prayer? And then Natalie, could you lead us in the pledge?
Absolutely.
We do have a flag and everything here, so we can go ahead and take advantage of being together with those ceremonies that we've been missing.
Our dear Heavenly Father, we thank Thee for the great blessings of living in this great land. We thank Thee for the freedoms that we enjoy, and we thank Thee for Thy continual help and blessing. Father, we thank Thee for the opportunity to meet together as neighbors and friends and representatives to strive to do the best to help our citizens here in North Salt Lake. We pray that Thou might bless us and help us. Please bless the full-time staff and city employees, especially those serving on our streets and plowing and keeping our water running and making sure that we're safe every day. Please bless them and their families. We pray for those serving in the military and the armed forces. Please bless those members of their families that are here serving at home, that they may be blessed as well. We pray for continue help for our country and for those leading it. And we say this in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.
Thank you both, and sorry I didn't make that clearer, Natalie. But it is nice to get together and see each other in person and go through some of these ceremonies that we've been missing. So I welcome everyone to our regular session. I'm Marlene Arvey, and I'd like to welcome everyone here. We like to start our meetings by allowing citizen comment. Linda, do we have anybody on Zoom? Is there a way they can give comment if they would like to?
This is Dee Lalas. I think I can comment.
Okay, Dee, let me recognize you. Dee, could you just give us your address?
784 East, 300 North. And by the way, everybody's turned off on video, so you can't see us. But I have two questions that my wife has asked me to ask the council. I talked to Stan about them a little bit, and so he's aware of the questions. The first one is that way a year ago, we used to have Uniting Neighbors, and when we got together, we decided to change the name to something else. And I don't remember what it was, but it was North Salt Lake Community Preparedness or something like that. But there's a lot of impetus by different groups, stakes and wards and neighborhoods of doing something about preparedness. And my understanding is next month is shakeout month. But the question is, where are we and what are our plans and where are we going with preparedness? And I'll leave that one and I'll ask the second and you can discuss what you want on. The second one is about recycling. We've had a lot of people and there's a lot of questions about where you can, and there's two parts of this, dump stuff and recycle stuff. For instance, batteries, you're not supposed to put in your garbage can and fluorescent bulbs and tires and some of these things. I would like the city to create a on the refrigerator list that says what we can do with these. Where do we take old computers or TVs or electronics, mattresses? What about grass and turf and oil and paint and bicycle tires and things like that? I'd like to have somebody published and put out with a newsletter, a page where you can say appliances can go here, refrigerators can't be recycled here, but the other things can. Is that possible to create a citywide statement to tell all the residents where they can put things? And then the other question is about preparedness. Thank you.
So I can respond, and yeah, we can. We probably ought to do that. Let's go ahead and get a list together of where all the recycling should go. I mean, batteries, light bulbs, you can take those to Lowe's. The TVs, we have to take those up to the landfill, and they have a place up there for recycling electronics. But to get a list together to make sure everybody knows where they go, because it does cause significant problems when we throw the wrong things in our garbage cans. We do right now... And I don't, those that are out there and those that haven't looked at it, we have a recycling facility at the Davis landfill right now where we're recycling most of all of our garbage right now. It's the recycled stuff is cleaner and we get a much higher yield from that, but we're actually recycling all of our, or we're processing the majority of our municipal garbage through those. And there is... If you go to Wasatch Integrated Waste, they have some little clips that you can view that are very informative. But if we put the wrong thing in the garbage, it causes big problems there as they try and process that. So absolutely, we'll do that and get it in a newsletter. There's Linda over there. So we'll have Linda do that. And as far as Uniting Neighbors, let me have Stan address that and then...
Okay, thanks, Dee, for the heads up the other day. I've done a little bit more looking into what we've been doing and what other communities are doing. As you know, last time we met, which was quite some time ago, we talked about maybe having or trying to get South Davis Fire District to maybe take over the emergency preparedness part. But since that time, I found out that they're not interested in the Bountiful emergency preparedness thing is quite active and going well, and they didn't really want to invite us in. And as you know, the emergency preparedness is all based on LDS church boundaries. So the stakes that have some wards in Bountiful have all joined Bountiful. So that means most of the city council here are actually in the Bountiful emergency preparedness area. And you're in Woods Cross? Okay, so. So we, you know, as you know, we've had limited participation from the stakes that are actually in the North Salt Lake area. We've had, you know, somebody from Foxborough is always showing up. Nicholas was always showing up there. And then for a long time, we had somebody from the North Salt Lake Parkway stake showing up, but eventually they weren't coming anymore. So we're trying to look at reorganizing that and trying to get it together, but it looks like it's still going to be on stake boundaries, and that's probably going to limit us to one or two stakes based on what I'm seeing on the maps. But I think we'll move forward and try to see what we can do to get it back to where as organized as the Bountiful area is. Woods Cross is kind of in the same boat as we are, it looked like. They don't have much going on there. West Bountiful looks like they have a committee, but they haven't met since 2017, or at least their minutes kind of reflect that. So that's kind of where we're at, Dee, right now. But as far as renaming it, I think we ought to rename it because it's tough to use it as uniting neighbors. At one time, it was set up that way because we're going to unite east and west. And now it almost appears that the east side has got their own thing going. So I'm not sure it's uniting neighbors anymore.
There aren't that many stakes on the east side that are in Bountiful. I mean, that Lisa's ward is. I think there are two wards.
Well, so
there are two wards.
So is yours three?
No.
Yours, according to the maps, you're in the North Salt. Cordell. You're in the Bountiful North Salt Lake district.
Okay. Cordell. I guess we do have. Yeah, we do have two wards in there.
But that's the problem we're kind of running into.
Need to make sure you tuck into your mic.
Sorry, I thought I had it pushed. So yeah, that's the problem we're having is that the east side of our city is a lot of it's in the Bountiful Emergency Preparedness District. And they've been servicing it and they've been doing a good job. Can't complain. So even where I live now, it's all.
Yeah, so why did the fire agency say they weren't interested in helping us coordinate?
I think what that comes down to is the other cities already have personnel and programs put together.
Okay.
And just don't feel like they want to fund another position at the fire district.
All right. Well, we're running into territoriality. Okay.
Can I ask a question, please, Mayor?
Yes.
Is it still the best idea to organize it by stake? Would it be a better idea to organize it by neighborhood or?
Well, it goes from stake and then down into neighborhood. And so you use the emergency preparedness coordinators from the stake that goes down to the ward that goes down to the blocks. And the church already has all of those, all that infrastructure in place. So they already have kind of block captains there. So we've always piggybacked onto it. But to be honest, I think there are a lot of things that we as a city can do and should be doing to help coordinate it. Because when there are emergencies, we have resources that they're going to need. And, you know, maybe we'll be able to just go through Bountiful for all of them. But I think there are a couple of things, and we'll talk about it a little bit later, and you're more familiar with it than I think others are. I went to Citizens That Care training. We'll talk about that later. But I think we maybe ought to think of whether we want it to be just emergency preparedness or how we want to do it. But I think there is a role we as a city should play in trying to coordinate it. And I don't know if we want to do anything with the Great Shakeout. It's so hard with COVID, but that's hopefully ending soon. So
yeah, I'll reach out to the fire department. They usually do something on the Shakeout for all the residents in the district. But I think this is an area, you know, and Councilmember Porter talked to me earlier today as well. This is an area where we certainly could benefit from putting more emphasis and more work in advance of emergencies. During the windstorm, all of our cities pull together, everybody in the county pulls together, and we're so grateful for Chad Monroe, and since Commissioner Kamalu's here, we can say that to her, but the infrastructure they've put in place was invaluable during the windstorm. I think that if we're looking to Bountiful as an example, Bountiful was able to activate hundreds and maybe thousands of residents to help get their streets cleaned up because of the advanced work they had done with their emergency preparedness efforts. And so what happened in their city was all of the downed trees were picked up by the city, but mostly by residents who then deposited that debris in LDS church buildings. And that's where the city was able to pick it up. And so that was a great effort. Our response was good, but it was mostly a public works response. We were able to clean up the city quickly with the help of the National Guard and UDOT and our own public works crews. And really wasn't until the third day when we put out on social media that we needed the residents to respond. And that's about all we did. Now, we did notice a difference. People did respond to that. But in that incident, it would have been great if we had had phone trees put together in advance, if we'd been able to get the word out to citizens on how to respond and how to support the city's response. And so we could have done better. So those are some things we've taken away from the windstorm. And I think it's a great idea and something we ought to, maybe in the future, I can report back to the council on some efforts.
Thanks,
Councilman Porter.
Is there any other public comment? Okay. If there's no further public comment, Commissioner Kamalu, welcome. We're so happy to have you here. Thank you for taking an interest in our wonderful city. Anyway, let me turn some time over to you, and then we'll turn it over to the council to see what kind of questions we have.
That sounds great. Thank you so much, Mayor. I had Curtis run around, as he was already running around and giving you the portfolio list too. So this this is how we've divvied up some of the support that the three commissioners give. So you can see Commissioner Stevenson is on the left column, and then Commissioner Elliott in the middle, and I am on the right in the, with the red. And we just take turns being chair. So this is Commissioner Stevenson's year as chair. Guess who was the chair last year? That would be me. It was quite a year. And then there's all the other electeds that have their own responsibilities. And we just are liaisons. Of course, we don't tell them what to do. So then there's county departments. And there's board assignments. And then there's various committees. So what I have done is made just a few little notes to share with you some of the things that might be most interesting to North Salt Lake, and then for sure, I'll be happy to answer questions. First, I can say that North Salt Lake's been on my radar for years, and I try to figure out why, except that, you know, we all pass through North Salt Lake when we go through to the rest of the county, so you're kind of on display, and I have plenty of friends who live in your city, And I think really what it is that I've seen, I was a Kaysville planning commissioner for 4.5 years before I was came into the county in my role. And I would say one, and that's how I know David Church, from hearing him speak and train at the city level. Once a planning commissioner, always a planning commissioner. I've decided that is why I think the way that I do, right? Okay, you can relate to that, right? And I wish that at every council and every maybe state legislator has had that experience of being, right? It would make a giant difference. So I have just seen your city over, I don't know how long, over the years that I passed through or come down for something, really just taking shape and continuing to make progress that is, you know, has been shared with around the whole state. This is what needs to happen. Everyone needs to be moving in this direction. And you've been really doing that. And so I congratulate you. That's wonderful. I've noticed your leadership in the waste. You know, guess what? Waste very much interests me as well. And now your mayor is the chair of the Wasatch Integrated Waste. But before that, I learned about your new facility that you built, and which is fascinating. And a lot of my family background is scientific, and so the science of all of that is just fascinating. I actually try to stop and read those boards, you know, to just try to fathom how it all works. So just really appreciate some of your leadership in other areas, but those are just some standouts for me right off the top. So things that I can share with you are, you can see that if this is the pin that I'm wearing. It's the 75th anniversary of the Davis County Library System. And so that's a long time to have this system started pretty humbly. What'd you say?
Does Davis County have libraries?
That was perfect. So most of the discussions about your part of the county happened before I became a commissioner, but I am now that commissioner. So here's what I can tell you. There is already a study underway about that Bountiful Library specifically. The scope is limited to that building and to the programs there. But that's kind of like the thing that could happen now in the middle of everything else, so that we can start by knowing what are our options even with that building. So that's going on. I'm thinking that it's in April that we're supposed to get the results of that study. So coming up.
And what exactly are you looking at there? I know they want to move it north and we want it moved south.
Oh, goodness. I have no idea where this will go. And that is a very honest statement right there. Also, the library director who just retired and had been in the county libraries for 46 years, not as director for all that time, but as her employment for all those years, she's retired now. And so there's also a new library director, and his name is Josh Johnson. And he's very good. He went through a very robust recruitment process where we were open to, you know, all kinds of people and had over 70 people apply. So we had a really good internal, and that in the end was the unanimous choice. So I do a lot of work in health and human services, and we have had to work pretty intensely with our health department, but I won't take any credit away from them. They stand out in the entire state and beyond. And we're so fortunate because of the drive-through facility. Who has one of those? I mean, it's perfect. And it's really neat too, because prior commissions never could really figure it out and make a decision on that facility because it still had the dirt floor, and anything that wasn't a dirt floor use, they had to put manually down this other floor, which was most of the uses anymore in a long time. And Curtis was here for all that history, even before being clerk auditor. So, and that whole part of the county's changed all around that is, you know, changed dramatically. So we made some decisions kind of earlier, long before anyone dreamed of a pandemic, but we decided to cement the floor, and we decided to take some tourism funds that have the limited use and be able to partner with, well, they reached out to us to, it was kind of simultaneous idea with the Utah State Extension that's located in Kaysville and the land that they have there. They said, boy, we would cherish, we would utilize, we would love some sort of arena here that then isn't part of a debate into the decades to come. So we have partnered with them, and there will be an agricultural heritage center on that property, and it will have an indoor arena, and it will have an outdoor arena. So that was a wonderful thing that happened, and we were able to get the floor. It kind of takes a long time to design, believe it or not, just concrete, project everything that needs to go under that concrete and get all that figured out. And by the time that it was done, it was just in time for drive-through elections, which we had never, you know, that was never a reason that we were concreting the floor. But that happened, and then we now have the drive-through vaccination clinic, and it's hugely successful. And there are still, with the current category, which is now opened up to all the underlying conditions, right, 16 and older, and if you have any of the comorbidities, then everyone is eligible to come. The governor opened it up for people to go across county lines, so those people, some of them are choosing to come to Davis County, and they're still just keeping up and still have appointments available. When it opens up to the entire population, And when the constraint is no longer the amount of vaccine, then our health director, Brian Hatch, is, you know, he's always kind of ahead of it. And he says we may need a second location also. And so we have just now barely come up with another location. We could use part of our conference center, but they'd have to set up and take down. And we have now found a place that's just empty. You know how there's just places that are, we're still paying their rent, but they're empty. We have found a former call center in Layton, just barely north of the mall, just right there, that looks like it's working out for that could be a second location. And it's also very good. It's not drive-through, but otherwise it's a great location. And it is also central for citizens to come and be immunized. So I have a lot of human services, and you can see lots of those lists. And I truly, these portfolio lists we take around, because then if you have a question or if you have an idea, you can look and see exactly which commissioner to reach out to. And we welcome it. We so love the engagement with our cities and with even individual citizens. Related to the pandemic, and thank you for thanking Chad Monroe. He came into his position in the county the end of February last year. My goodness. And he was amazing. He was the right person for that job. He was made a civilian position. The sheriff changed that. It wasn't before a civilian position, but he wanted some longevity in that position, and then he knew it would benefit to make that change. We have an amazing sheriff. So what the pandemic has done for us is really very early on, Chad Monroe and everyone working in the Emergency Operations Center, which still meets and still works on things every other Tuesday morning, we have decided that the county, we can see that the county needs to have a role for leadership in emergencies for Northern Utah. And there's a place, the Unified Command down in Salt Lake County, they have that role down kind of that center and further south. They do that, but we see an opportunity for us to take everything we've done and everything we've learned and everything we still want to do and learn, and continue to convene and work with the cities and the counties that are around us more northern. So for training, to gather for training. The sheriff had done that before, with the prior emergency manager, but it's in this little teeny room, and you know, they stand up and stand down as needed, and we just see a need growing, that we need something that is more permanent. And not only do we have Chad, and we've always had someone who does what Chad does, but that's all he does. And he also now has an assistant who is actually, her education is in emergency management. And we see that investment from the county as we're able to continue to grow. The location for that might start in the work center, which is also a part of that sheriff's protected area. And right now, Davis Behavioral Health has their receiving center in there, another amazing thing, which is a diversion, bridging the gap between individuals that law enforcement finds only having the option of taking them to jail or taking them to the emergency room. Now they can be taken, if they don't have to be booked into the jail, they can go to the receiving center. When that receiving center is already going to have a different building also in Farmington. It's been purchased by Davis Behavioral Health. So they're our big partner with the receiving center. Then when that building is finished with what needs to be done inside, probably by early summer, then the work center area will become free again. And that's probably where we will have our emergency operations center for Davis County. And the sheriff can see that it has space, and there's some things that can be done there to start with something that's more permanent. So a permanent emergency readiness facility is what I'm trying to convey. And then something that I never imagined. We have an attorney in the room, right? At least one. Are you? Yes. Is anyone else an attorney? Well, here we go, David Church. I knew Lisa. That's why I pointed to Lisa. She is, and I am not. But criminal justice work has found me. And so I have ended up being in some state committees for that. So you can see those at the bottom of the column, Indigent Defense Commission and the pretrial release and supervision. And we did, as a county, invest in pretrial right before Commissioner Stevenson and I came into office. We didn't have that at all. And we do now, and only three counties do. So that's a really great thing. We're doing well in that area around the state. And then I just, the last thing, are just thank you as cities for partnering with the county to figure out the paramedic service into the future, as well as the animal care service into the future. That's another example of things that I guess have always maybe seen that it could be better someday, and we've taken action, and we've only been able to work on that because of the cities working so closely with us. So thank you for that. And with that, I'll answer any questions, but that's okay, my basic.
Thank you so much. Unfortunately, we have kind of a hard deadline because we have interviews starting right now for our new attorney. Davis County is such a great place. I mean, we really do have great relationships between the cities. But the relationship to the county is something special. You guys have always been so supportive and worked so hard with us and for us. And you all are keeping up that great tradition. And thank you so much. It really is a great partnership.
Yes, it is. Thank you.
Okay. And again,
councils.
I apologize, but we have,
yeah.
Speaking of attorneys, Mr. Church has informed us that he wants to go fishing more. So we have to go ahead and
enable
that.
You're lucky you kept him this long, because I think I knew that a few years ago that you were looking forward to more fishing. Okay.
Okay. Thanks, Lorraine.
Thank you.
Okay. So with that, it's 7:30. Do we, are they going to be online? Is that what we decided, or is somebody here? Well, we're sure they're not online. Well, if they're not online and they're not out there, then I'll open it up. Oh, he's out there. Okay. With that, so the next, we'll need to move forward on the agenda to interviewing of the finalists for the city attorney position. So I think all of you know, I'm sure you know, that we talked about, we had seven applicants. Lisa's firm dropped out, which was her choice. There was a committee of myself and Brian and Stan and Dwayne Huffman from West Bountiful City, who is a resident of our city and who is very helpful in the process. All of the applicants that we had were great firms. I think they were all qualified. We needed to narrow it down to the two that we thought would be the best fit for our city. And we have those here this evening. We will go into a closed session to conduct these interviews, which is, I guess, is okay. Competence, okay. So, with that, to start the process, I need a motion to go into closed session.
Mayor, I'll make a motion that we go into closed session to discuss personnel issues.
I'll second the motion.
So we have a motion by Brian Horrock, seconded by Stan Porter. Is there any further discussion? We'll need a roll call vote. Ryan?
Aye.
Natalie?